expectant, depending upon you, counting on you to work in this next hour, hour and a half to accomplish your will for our lives and lives of those around us, that the circles that we touch, for change. We ask that you would change us and make us more like your Son, sensitive to opportunities, loving, winsome, that would draw people to your the message of a free relationship with you. Pray that you would give us wisdom as we work through these issues, and that we would, in our individual spheres and our individual aptitudes, learn to apply this in a way that flows from our heart and from our styles and from our way of life into the lives of the people around us. So we would ask that you would protect us and focus, help us stay focused and be sensitive to your Spirit, and that your Spirit would do the transforming work in our hearts and our minds and our wills for this. For your Son's sake, what this is all about, why we take time to do this, for his honor and for those nail-printed hands. Amen. Okay, we are going to now look at our assignments. Let's see, so what do we have to do for homework today? We should have had a couple of things. We had, 14? Yeah, 14 through 16, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we had 14 was described two false views of Jesus. Speculate on how those images are created and transmitted in our culture. So who would have one of those for us?
Prophet, he's angry and vengeful, and they use the example of how he cleared the temple. What I found interesting is it's used by Christians and non-believers alike, you know, to picture a wrathful God.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, Christians use it to justify why they can beat you up, right? Oh, look at Christ. He cleared the temple. I'm going to clear you too.
Right, right. You're just as good as those animals. Absolutely. Absolutely. But how would they be transmitted in our culture? Where do you see that?
Well, in just in daily conversation is what I was thinking of. You know, the example I just gave of Christians and then the non-believers, you know, say, well, look, you know, that's a gotcha God, right? He's always writing down your list of sins and he's waiting to get you.
Right.
And they use the example of Christ clearing the temple as a wrathful God.
You know, since what's interesting is apparently that would be largely our doing because of the, since unbelievers typically don't read the New Testament. Hold your applause. For those of you there, he was just snapping at a bug. It's a holdover from his job. He's trying to kill bugs everywhere he finds them.
I say non-believers. I mean, probably nominal believers would have been a better one because they probably heard it in Sunday school. When they were...
Right, exactly. And they've got a stereotype that they'll mention casually. That's okay. All right, another one?
I think a lot of movies depict a sort of mystical being that comes in time of need and then just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of Disney movies where, you know, mm-hmm. they sort of call on some thing that makes everything right, but it doesn't engage in a relationship. And,
right.
And even Touched by an Angel, I think, has this sort of, you know, come in times of need, but you don't get a sense of a consistent relationship developing
right.
afterwards.
If you need me again, here's my forwarding address, right?
Yeah,
right. The comment there was that, you know, the stereotype of God is only event-driven, that it's strictly, you know, in times of need, but it's not there as a companion. It's not a partner in day-to-day mundane things. It's only in the extraordinary events of life. And that's very, very true. And that's a good, even in the media that you point out, that's clear. It does get portrayed as a spot help. To bail you out of trouble, and as opposed to something to be involved in, like just ordinary decisions.
That's not something you should think about every day.
Right, right.
And mine was just that Jesus, you know, was probably even real, but just a teacher like Buddha,
right.
Muhammad, thrown in with all the rest, but certainly not a god or anything special.
Right.
But just one of the many teachers, kind of. You know,
an
certainly.
Avatar.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Humble, but kind of useless and ineffective.
That's so often what you get when you ask people, like the survey forms on the tank, who is Jesus,
right.
in your opinion? And they get a good teacher. It was either misunderstood, You know, we like his teachings, we like him, but we don't like what his followers did with him. You know, that's a fairly common thing. And that is certainly portrayed in the media as well. It's sort of hard to get deity on screen, which is an issue of the Eastern Orthodox Church. You can have him do miracles, but you could still be a prophet and do miracles. Say, Elisha, they wouldn't have been divine at all. And they did plenty of miracles, more than Jesus did, generally. So, good point. That's another one that he's bland. He's a bland teacher. That they just, we used to use the phrase the milksop Jesus. You know, that he was just, you know, just flat as a pancake, and he never held anybody accountable, and so there couldn't have been a thing like clearing out the temple. That must have been his evil twin kind of thing. But
Prozac, wasn't he?
Yeah, some Prozac. Well, that's right, the poster child. Right, exactly, right. And there's a lot to, yeah. We have that, remember, also in God, about God the grandfather type. You know, God the grandfather, or God the vengeful, or God the distant. But we just never get the picture of him as being a close, warm father. It's interesting, the studies that I'm doing now for a piece on the tank have to do with all the miracles of the Jews around Jesus, exorcisms, divine men in ancient Greek history and stuff of that type. And the rabbis, when they would tell parables about God as parables about God, they would always use God as a king. God would always be the king of a kingdom. Very rarely would he be otherwise viewed. But when Jesus gives most of his parables of God is like the father, is a father of a prodigal son, and even when he's a king, he acts out of character. He throws banquets for poor people. He lets people, he forgives huge debts of his servants. So that even in the case where that sovereignty, that king is there, there's a heart of God that somehow Jesus is trying to draw people to, that you would not have noticed in just a parable about a king. And that's part of what we're... It's the delicate balance when we try to draw a picture of God to people, that he is still God, but that he is good-hearted. And that's a delicate balance that has to be taken seriously at the same time that he has to be appreciated for the goodness of that heart. Okay, pivot paragraphs. Now, this was one of the more critical ones. Practice in a mirror at least 3 times before class. We didn't ask you to videotape that this week. Yeah, right, exactly. In front of a mirror. But let's look at let's turn back to that section, because we just sort of read through that last time, and we should have a few extra minutes tonight to look at that pivot paragraph. That was on page 19, I believe it was. And the point, remember, of the pivot was to basically ask, you know, sort of where they are. You know, can I, tell my story? Can I tell my story? Do any of you have a pivot that's written down well enough to share with us? Anybody else? That was a little brief. Okay. Go ahead. I saw that hand. I won't recognize you publicly.
Well, I'll share mine then.
Okay.
So it's sort of imagining that we're talking about some situation like an illness or a crisis.
Right.
So, you know, in situations like these that make you wonder about the bigger questions in life, how to move beyond just living day to day to thinking about what are the important lifetime goals. I don't know how much you spend thinking about these questions, but recently, as I've been encountering deaths and serious illnesses of people close to me, I've been reflecting a lot more about what that means, the meaning of life. For me, that life is amazingly precious, and I'm even more intent on learning how to lead a genuinely rewarding and fulfilling life and cope with disappointments and dangers of life in this day and age. So does this situation make you wonder about those things? Would you like to talk about how you react to them? I'd be glad to share some of the thoughts that have helped me get through times like this.
Right. And notice that one of the key elements there was the fact this was a personal experience. Remember, as we keep coming back to, this has to be something that was lived in your life And if you've been reflecting upon this, you know, then that's what you share. It comes right out of your experience, because this is a peer thing. And this would not be a face-to-face kind of meeting. This would be a side-by-side at a table kind of. You'd be looking at the same kind of material, trying to look at the same kind of information, that kind of thing. And again, you had the elements in there of my personal experience, you know, and then, you know, would you be interested in talking? Would you want to hear what the results of my stuff is? You know, basically, I'm willing to talk about it any time. Well, tonight we've got to actually move to call to action, where we go to the next step. After, if they say, yeah, I'd like to hear the story. Yeah, what'd you come up with? What's your opinion? How do you understand this? And then when you give that, then we've got another a call to action at the end of sharing the gospel that has to do with how close is my experience, how close is your experience to mine? You know, saying how close, where are you in this process relative to where, you know, I was through this. So that's a good way of looking at it too. Good way.
I've got this guy that named Mike that I'm targeting, and I call him Mikey, you know, just to get him going. Mike's one of these thinker guys.
Right.
Or like, he like to think he's a thinker guy, and he's always got all the permutations. You can't nail him down on anything because he's like Jell-O. He keeps moving.
Right.
And there's also this slogan in the Silicon Valley, you got your 2-minute elevator pitch. You know, you want to pitch product to the guy, you got him on the elevator, you want to know.
Absolutely.
So I, you know, basically pretending to talk to Mike, I said, so the contrasting claims and counterclaims are puzzling enough, but then you throw in the reality of bad times and good times, and how unpredictable they are, and how some folks seem to get more of their share of the one than the other, and it becomes downright confusing. What's up with that? Well, I finally understood if I'm going the wrong way, God encourages U-turns. I can give you the 2-minute elevator story now or sometime later if you prefer.
Right. So what you got there? You got a personal. He's drawn a picture of the conflict scenario, and then he's talking about, I have learned that God does this. So he's got the personal element in it about God does a U-turn. And he says, I have learned this. So it's not just, I've been told, I'm passing this on, this is what my church teaches, my religious tradition teaches, you know, this is what I have learned, and therefore we get to the 2-minute elevator. See? So that's good. Okay? Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Just made me flash on something, Kevin, that was so good at, as you could also, because that'll come up in class tonight at the homework, a wonderful pitch into the lunch.
No,
he's going to have us do it.
Right, the 2. Absolutely. Good point.
You're on it already. I should have known.
Okay, now 16 was the mock-up of an entire Sunday lunch.
Yeah.
So how many write-ups were less than one page?
Oh.
Good. Okay. Because see, the thing is if you wrote out a 3-page Sunday lunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You would struggle when you got to the Sunday lunch to remember what you had written down, right? Which is really bad. This is not where we're going with this, right? This is to do something short and pithy so that you say it 3 times, and the 20% of it that's good, right, the Spirit will use when you need it. Because that's what a lot of what we do is. We sort through things, and we think through these things, and then the wheat from the chaff gets separated out in actual experience. There's that interesting phrase about when they're called in persecution, Jesus says, don't give any thought to what you're going to be have to speak, because the Spirit will give you words. But he trains them on doing evangelism, teaches them this message for 3 solid years, right? He says, but don't worry about it, you know, when you get there, because it'll already be part of who you are. That's part of why we do the mirror thing, right? Is that your mirror pitches are will vary if you do it right each time you do it. You'll change it and you'll edit, you know, if you're reading it. And the thing is that this stuff is, you're hearing it as well, and it gets thrown back in the back. So you will have, these are artificial scenarios at some level, because your Sunday lunch may occur on an elevator. It may occur in a commute. It may occur in any number of situations different. And what will happen is that the components, the elements, the objects will come together to make a semi-coherent. And as long as it's motivated right, love covers a multitude of sins, and we're okay. And so God can be pleased in that and bless the heart-to-heart contact that produces. And so the write-up of the Sunday lunch, like I say, you may or may not get to use that. Sunday lunches for me have been generally in cars, generally like on the way to a customer, on a customer call as being in executive sales. You know, they pick you up at the airport and then drive you to the corporate account. And in most places, that's a 30-minute drive, which is a Sunday lunch. And it's a very captive audience. An air sales rep, I'm an exec. You know, I'm not trying to abuse power here. But if you're sensitive and stuff like that, you know, you can sometimes get those opportunities to create those. If you know the individual that knows you and already, you know, you already have some level of relationship with them. Out of the blue, it's a little trickier. And again, it's completely different if you're doing taxi cab types. If it's what we call broadcast evangelism, where there's not prior contact and you don't know about the individual. And a lot of what you have at the office will be in this contact. Be a contact of where you're actually not aware of an opportunity that presents itself, where the heart is already being worked on by God and softened up by the realities of life. But there are people that you target. There are people that are obnoxious, that are dug in, but God has put them on your heart to say, I'm going to go sow love and I'm going to sow truth and see where we can go with this guy, you know. And those are a slightly different model. The content will still be the same. And some of the things that we've talked about here allow you to get there. You know, we've talked about, you know, where are you in your spiritual journey? How is your thinking? You know, those are things to surface opportunities. But we haven't gotten into where we're just literally going to, you know, charge out of the gates and, you know, charge the attacking army and do a debate kind of scenario. Those are a little trickier. We'll get into those when we get into problems, either tonight or next time. But what we're trying to do here, like I say, is develop those little Sunday lunches and so that the elements will come out. So that you see basically, I cannot hammer upon this enough, that it has to be couched in first person singular. This is my experience. This is what God has done in my life. And because that's the most authenticating part of where the epistle of life is written. Yeah.
I just wanted to share a fun thing that backs up what you were saying about God will pull it together. 23 years ago, I was in Saudi Arabia. And that only bears relevance to the fact that last week I was in an ARCO station and the guy that took my money was named Muhammad.
Right.
So I said, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, kifalik inti. And he started...
But wait a minute, we're not charismatic here.
No.
Let's back out of this. Now, wait a second. Sorry. If we don't have an interpreter, we can't do it.
That's just the earliest, easiest formal greeting you
understand.
Learn.
Right.
And I couldn't remember that. I mean, out of
time. Right.
So he pulled it together.
Absolutely.
And so all of a sudden, Muhammad and I, we got a relationship,
cool.
Right?
That's right, right.
We're doing this long-winded exchange,
yeah.
and they got a hand protocol that's like hand jive, you know,
cool.
When you go through this thing. And then all of a sudden I'm talking to you, he says, well, how do you know, you don't know.
Yeah, right.
But Jesus does.
Right.
You know, and oh, you follow Jesus.
Right.
So all of a sudden we're talking.
Right.
I didn't convince him.
Right, I understand.
And I didn't win.
Yeah, well, it's not right. Yeah, what you made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw a difference from a normal Christian type. Right.
And back then I was not a believer.
Yeah. Right, so that's a good example of the being able to pull it together. Because those things do pop up. Those things bubble out of memory, and that's part of our confidence and our faith. And again, like I say, I also want to emphasize, you know, we go through all these things that you need to put in here. It's still a love thing. I mean, it's just, you know, you can bumble around, you can mess up. There's an old management saying that you got to get 51% of the things that you have to do 51% right or more. That's all it takes for success. In most cases, it's 51% of all the areas of critical success factors. If you're 51% or more in those, then you're okay. And there's lots of play in there. Sometimes 75% in one area can compensate for a 42% in another if they're tightly connected. And in the model of love covers a multitude of sins, this is how this works. Because I've had similar situations, or situations in which the words that I shared with somebody years earlier, right, that I would no more say today, you know, because it was full of buzzwords or full of slogans or something like this. The only thing they remembered, see, was my attitude and a couple of the things that were useful out of what I said. You know, I have a gentleman that calls me every year at Thanksgiving for the last 26 years because he trusted Christ. I shared with him one Thanksgiving at the Mississippi State Cafeteria. And he trusted and became a believer. And every year around Thanksgiving, he finds out where I am and calls me, thanks me for sharing with him, you know. And every now and then I'll ask him, what do you remember that I said? You know? Well, it was just, you know, it was very vague. It's, you know, back to that vagueness thing. you know, because I'd given up, I'd resigned, you know, these things don't mean a lot, you know, later, but back then, I'd resigned the student senate and resigned a couple of positions, you know, to devote my time to Jesus, right? And this guy was, you know, politically motivated and all this stuff like this, and he just couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it, and asked me about it, and so we, you know, sat down and had that lunch. And that's what he remembered. See, was the difference it made, and a few of the phrases, because I would have only been a new believer, you know, I had been an active Christian for probably no more than three months at the time. I'd given my life to the Lord in the summer, and this is Thanksgiving, you know, so I'd been studying, but I was raised in where you didn't learn the Bible. And so, but again, like I said, that's the point, is that what gets said in love, you know, God will do the same thing to their head that he does to us spitting this stuff out. You know, let that stuff remember and it'll bubble and it'll cook, because a lot of that happens to us as well. Okay. Now, when we get to the last section, you're going to have to read your Someday Lunches. So let me just go ahead and tell you, you know, on the last session, or maybe the next to last one, for those of you that are going to plan to be absent, because I've set it up. I saw some minds working there already. And I thought, well, no, I can't do this. You can't miss that much class. That's right. Surprise, surprise. Pop quiz. Ideally, what I would like to do would literally for you to make a copy and us circulate it as a group anonymously, not necessarily read it out loud, but I'd like everybody to read each other's story. And sort of see and get a flavor of how they would present it, and that way we could learn from one another in that process. So, what you could do, if you can, bring a copy. If you finished it, you know, if you're caught up in.
We could tell somebody else's life story, and that would be a lot better.
That way, if it doesn't work.
Well, I tell you what. To make it interesting, we have six people here. I'll bring in three or four extras and make them up. We'll circle. We'll try to guess whose life story it was to make that happen. Okay. Okay, so tonight we're going to start on call to action. And call to action is where we're finally going to appeal to their will. This is where we've... What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just think it's closing.
Close them, yeah. This is, always be closing. A, B, C, right? We're going to actually get through delivering theology to them and deliver history to them and try to get them to move forward some way, one way or the other. We're going to call them to... Jesus did this so consistently. In just his very presence would provoke responses. And you just sort of had to do business with him if he would come through. When you'd come up to him and say, can you help me? And he says, you have to make a decision. What do you mean? If you can help me, would you please help me? You'll have to make a decision on this. Where do you stand? And call to action is in A that we talk about, why do we need this step? And this is a step where call to action would say, what are you going to do about it? Are you ready to do something about it? Are you going to move forward? Are you going to take a step? What are you going to do with the information I just gave you or I've been giving you? Where are you with that? And are you ready to incorporate that into your life and learn from it and make that next step, one way or the other? Right? And we do that for a couple of reasons. One is the affirmation by personal challenge. In other words, when I challenge somebody to take advantage of that, right? I affirm their significance in my eyes. When I say, you're important enough for me to challenge you and say, what are you going to do with this? Okay, when I appeal to them as a responsible individual that you need to do something with this. Okay, depending upon how you say that, in either a pretty assertive or some of the milder forms we'll talk about, it communicates my interest in their welfare. If I just say, well, I know you're interested in this, I'll send you a book, and you can work through it, and wherever you come at, that's cool, but I'm not really interested in how you do something with this, or whether you choose this or not. This communicates a personal affirmation, an interest in the outcome of that individual. Communicates respect, well-wishing, if you've done this right, sincerity, and the importance of this. In other words, this is important enough. And in older times, you could get away with all importance. You could all say, you're in danger, the sinner's in the hand of an angry God. I have a tape that I listen to when I get to exercise. And it's got a refrain in there, sinners in the hands of a loving God. And it's a deliberate take off on the Jonathan Edwards, the old Jonathan Edwards sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. And it's a real beautiful concept. And what we're trying to do here is that the importance is to everyone in the decision and not just them as a fire escape. In other words, God has something. God's heart wants to do good as well. God doesn't want to be disappointed in their outcome either. Okay? It's not just that they won't do as well without God. It's that this is everybody is interested in the outcome of this decision. I would like to see them develop a relationship with God. They would like to, you know, achieve whatever we've talked about, achieve more fulfillment, develop, feel, have peace of mind about the future, whatever their issues have been, and that God is interested in seeing their health and wellness as well. And so in the earlier days, 50 years ago, you could do the old, you know, the importance was avoiding hell, you know, and that would be enough because people took hell seriously enough then. I don't know how healthy that was. That's a separate issue. The emphasis in the New Testament, it has elements of avoiding wrath, but almost all of them are directed toward the religious elite. When he goes out and deals with the normal folk like us, the poor, it's the old, come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. The ones about you know, judgment and all those are normally given to the spiteful religious elite, the Pharisees, and these are the ones that are warned that because of the responsibility and the privilege that they've been given to minister to the flock of God, that they are facing, you know, James, be not many of you teachers, for you will be more severely judged. And so you don't have that message very often into the life of just normal rank and file humans. So there would be cases where that would be appropriate. You know, I mean, there would be cases where that's appropriate. And there are ways of delivering that message in ways that are not culturally bound to the Dantean images, you know, of the medieval ages, right? And we will talk about some of those. We've got some of these mentioned in here about bearing their own consequences and things of that. But we're trying to, this step is important. There's a very practical step about this, is that humans, we are slow moving often. We're not the brightest, you know, in the world at all. I mean, we take new information, sometimes we'll use it, sometimes we won't. But there's a spiritual dimension that's present in all of our lives, and that's deception. And, you know, when you look at the passages in the New Testament, it says that unbelievers, you know, have a definite influencing, you know, they're under a world system, it's called there. I mean, it's pictured pretty graphically that their eyes are blinded to the gospel. And there's some very strong metaphors that they have calloused their own hearts from inside toward truth. And you have all some of these very negative images that applies to their lives that apply to a lesser extent, but nonetheless, in New Testament imagery to believers, we do the same thing to ourselves. We deliberately will pick the deceitfulness of sin. You know, there are things that we do that emulate the same kind of behavior. And so we're always having to deal with that. We're always having to deal with that. Paul, pastors in 1 Timothy, talks about how people that are arguing with the pastor type, in the case of Timothy, you know, he says, gently instruct them. You know, so that perhaps God will visit them with a change of mind, and they'll come to their senses, having escaped from the trap of the devil. So here's a normal parishioner or church member that's developed some kind of combative attitude toward just basic gospel truth that Timothy's doing. You didn't have elaborate theology back then; it was just still real basics. And somehow this was a trap that was associated with the evil kingdom. That nonetheless does have impact on us, does affect us. We live in that world as well, but our core is not there, and we always have recourse in the kingdom of light. And so there's the reality that in the case of, you know, again, it's a little bit on the spectrum that, you know, people that are you know, are not believers, you know, they have that dimension. They have a dimension of deception and lulling and complacency about this sometimes. And normally, if we do this process right, and God has led us through opportunities and conversations and relationships with this individual, already at that point, that element is suppressed ever so slightly by the Holy Spirit and our spirit and love. And if you think about the way the process works, in your most clear-minded spiritual moment, You know it. You can sense, you know, those things we get once a year. It, you know, there's that sense. There's a clarity of perspective that's just unusual. You know, and it's just crystal clear during that one moment that some decisive crisis or something, and then scales fall away, man. It's just so clear that God is here with me, or it's so clear that this is the right thing to do. And then the rest of life lives in the mud. We stumble around, we see it, you know, and it's like a little fog, but our steps are lighted, but it's not that clarity like that. But there are times where God just sort of suppresses some of the murk, you know, out, and it's clear. And that's what happens when the Spirit is working, and that's you get it a lot in church, you know, when you get lots of the Holy Spirit sort of together worshiping. It's sort of like the sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and you have the same kind of thing where you've got a warm conversation going on with somebody. You have that Spirit's natural love and affection softening and suppressing some of the more malevolent elements. So, when I make a call to action, see, I'm trying to call sometimes out of that. I'm trying to speak into the, come on, step out into the light. It's a, you know, here's a little light, take a step, and as you take a step, you get more light, basically, and things of this type. Now, under B, it's develop your own call to action. I think, if I know me, this will be an assignment you'll have, yep, 17. For use after your story, or for use after getting them some information or an answer. That's where they've asked you, well, what about this? And you give them some kind of information. And I've got two of them here that's the kind that I use. And the first one, for use after your story. Well, that's my story or experience or background or thinking or whatever, and how I came to the decision to approach God for a positive relationship. It wasn't simple, but I was honest enough and needy enough to ask Him for help. All right. The next one is my sort of pivot thing here. How closely does my experience parallel your own thinking and issues at this point? Okay. Now, I've asked them a thinking question, just like that question about how does your thinking today differ than when it did when you were a kid, or how does what you believe now differ from what you were taught, or how has the priorities changed from 10 years ago or something of this type. And once I've, at this point, after my story, see, this is different than me asking them, what's your religious opinion? Before I have laid my story out. I mean, we're back to the salt, the jello thing, right? I don't want to just say, what's your opinion on God, Christ, and the salvation, how one gets to heaven. It's over if you start that. You know, no sense going down that road. But well, this is after I've told a story, okay, of very concrete, real experience, and how theologically, I understand that, God and Jesus and sin and righteousness, whatever, how we put the phrases in there, right? I've got a structure that somebody can agree with or disagree with to some extent, you know, to a greater or less extent. In other words, I frame the discussion at this point. See, we're not going to go all around the world until we get the problems. When I ask this question about how closely does yours match, if this conversation has gone on to where you got all the way to a Sunday lunch, you've had a couple of conversations, they're interested, right? They've already assumed that there's some commonality, or else they're not going to listen to you because they got problems of their own. See? They've seen some point of contact in the conversations with you that you might have something of value to them. If your story comes out of personal experience, you say, how close does this match your experience? Then they will generally come up with a, here's where it does and here's where it doesn't. Right? The point of this is you're going to ask them to think about it. They're going to move forward when they process this question. See? They're going to start mapping where they are inside to your how you came to Christ, basically. And they're going to say, well, gosh, except for that last step, I'm there. I feel the same way. I've started been thinking more about these because of deaths in my family. I've started realizing it's been the U-turn streets. You know, I'm close. I'm close to that. You'll also get those that will say, no, mine is completely different than your experience. Okay? And if this came out of a Sunday lunch, they don't know what they just said, basically. If they get all the way to a Sunday lunch and they say, no, mine's completely different, What they're saying is that they radically difference one point in that process that you described, not the whole thing. The whole thing, you wouldn't have gotten to the lunch with them. If you're so far out of sync with them, you don't get that far in this process. But if they say, no, I'm at completely odds with that, what that means is that at some point in there they disagree with, and more likely it's that thing about where you would have said, when it finally made sense to me to do this, I either rushed to do it, or I fought God and I did it, or eventually I got there, or somebody encouraged me, but I finally made that decision, that point. That is where you'll get some disagreement. They'll say, so no, I radically disagree, I'm not there. And they're generally talking about that big step thing, very often. Like I say, if you get to a someday lunch on that.
And a lot of them stopped listening right there and started preparing their counter-argument.
Yeah, if depending upon how much they know about you as a Christian, part of what we've been doing is weeding in the Lord to our conversations and trying to make sure that they have a correct understanding, as best we can, of the goodness of God and the godness of God. Then, if we haven't done that well, if we just literally surprise them with religious dialogue, we're going to certainly get that response. We're going to absolutely get that response with building this thing. If they have seen a credibility come out of our life and a change in positioning of God, we won't typically get that response. We'll get, like I say, they'll disagree with us on a point in there. And the most common response is, a pause. They don't know, you know, because this is part of the confusion, the vagueness of this, of the dilemma that they're in. They'll get to a, I don't know. At some points I'm like it, and some points I'm not. Well, okay, which points are you like it? Well, I heard here, and I thought about these things a lot, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you get them talking about this in points of seminar. And so where would be the biggest difference? Well, I'm just not really ready to take that step yet, because there's still so much, you know, I don't understand about this. And all, you know, because normally that's what the fallback is. I don't know enough. I want to know more so I can avoid faith. In other words, I want to make a knowledge decision. I want to plug it into a formula, and it come out. And so I don't even have to really take any kind of personal commitment to this. I just say, oh, well, the number said this, and I had to go with it. You know, and faith has both elements. It has a knowledge element, and it has that personal, do I want to do business with God? And that's why it's so critical to make sure that they got the right God there. Because you can tell them the facts of salvation all day long, be perfectly clear. They can see it's a perfectly free gift. They can understand the dynamics of their choices on the other side. But if God isn't good, they don't want to go there. Don't matter. They'll postpone decision. But if they stop being afraid of God in that process, somehow you've convinced them of the love of Christ. If you just love them into the kingdom, which is what we're trying to do here, you know, if that happens, then you won't get your pause due to that won't occur. You'll still get pauses. The general tendency is to pause here. The general tendency, if you've gotten this far through Sunday lunch, is to pause. Everybody wants to pause. Everybody wants to pause. Everybody wants to think more, but I don't have enough data. I don't have enough, right? And we'll talk about when we get to problems, what sort of is an issue there and how to cast that next response, right? But that's not for here. Right now I'm just talking about ways of doing a call to action. So the first one was, how closely does my experience parallel your own thinking? And then for use after getting them some information or answers. So they wanted information on miracles of Jesus, resurrection, how we know that the Bible is textually pure from the 3rd century church or something, you know, whatever you gave them information on. Did that information help any? How did it help? Excellent, hopefully. Okay. Did it give you enough help to get past that issue? Okay, at least for now. Now, this is the key, by the way, this is the standard approach to dealing with confusion. When they say, I don't know enough, the standard response is, well, how much on a scale from 0 to 10 does it take? I mean, because you could spend a billion lifetimes getting to 10 and still be where you are and I am and was today, where there's that element of, do I think God is good enough? And do I think He's good-hearted toward me? That I feel comfortable on the basis of the stuff that I do know and the experience you've shared of taking that step toward God. See? And so we'll try to cast this out of a on-off into a spectrum question. So if you're at 3, you know, is 4.5 enough? What does it take to get to 4.5? What other questions? What bothers you here? You know, what's still eating at you here? Is there something specific, or is it just a vagueness? Right? Because everybody's got a vagueness. Yeah, everybody's got a vagueness. So on this one is information. Did this information did it give you enough help to get past that issue, at least for now? And on to the bigger issue of how you and God should relate in the future. How much farther along would you say you are now in your decision-making process about that? So how much farther along are you after that information I gave you? You're getting them to think, did this make a change in me? Because we're always trying to get the knowledge to assimilate. Trying to get the knowledge to change care, to get the knowledge to be a basis for action. How much further along are you? Now, one issue that's embedded in here, because I've got this, and on to the bigger issue of how you and God should relate in the future. Now, when one of the groups were teaching me to witness on campus, they would use the phrase, you know, when somebody asks a question, you say that's a good question, but let's not get sidetracked. Let's focus on the real issue of who Jesus is, right? And what happened at the cross. And that is legitimate, in my opinion, an approach probably, you know, 75% of the time. There's 25% of the time where somebody can't go there with you because of a conscience issue over some issue that troubles them. In integrity, it's not that all skeptics are running from God. In other words, I don't no more believe that than anything anymore. That there are some people that literally God has been pulling toward that, but the kingdom has so got a problem that they cannot, in personal integrity, take a step of faith without some hope of resolving the problem of evil, or the problem of suffering, or the problem of church abuse, or you know something of this type. They need to have some hope that they will not be compromising their personal integrity by taking this step. Okay, so we'll have a number of ways that when we go through problems and objections of trying to understand how it's worded, looking at how it's worded to see whether it's smokescreen. I don't want to go there with you, and I'm going to use this excuse about why a God of love would make mosquitoes, right? As opposed to this is something. If I could only get this, you know, I could do this with a clear heart, Glenn. Kind of thing. We'll talk about that. But we want to always keep remembering that this is about the cross. This is about the cross. We want to, you know, always sort of come back there so that they see the love of God on the cross there. See, when you leave it open. Now, leaving it open is when you've done something and you're not going to do a call for action. So when you have to sort of leave the situation open, I've got this one written here. Give this some thought. If you have any questions about my experience of thinking through it, just hunt me down. Otherwise, I'll just check in with you next week, next month, next year sometime, or whatever, see how you're doing. In other words, I have not left it completely open. In other words, I said, you know, use me as a sounding board, you know, get questions about this stuff, you know, either literature or our conversations, our experience, hunt me down. Otherwise, I'll just casually check up, you know, see how things are going in about a month or so, or next week.
When might you use that? What kind of feedback are you getting from someone where you would tend to say, let's leave it open, give it some thought, as opposed to suggestion?
That's where you've tried like a call to action, and they've pushed back ever so slightly. In other words, when the read is, when you've tried to move them along gently, and they've taken a step back, and they've done some closed body language, they've done, I don't know, you know, what?
They said, I don't know.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you get the stop sign. You get a stop sign or slow down. We're going too fast here. You know, railroad's running over me. It's at that point that you would do a leave it open, you know. And we'll talk about that also when we get to when they say no, what you deal with that. And the general thing on when you hit a stop sign like that, it's to, you know, when they give you the signal, not tell you to stop. When they give you, when you pick up the signal, the general message is something like, you know, I know that this is an intensely personal decision. This is something you got to work through on your own, just like I did. You know, you got input and friends and people like this, but you know, this is something I understand that you got to do this. So, you know, let's talk about this maybe in a week or two. Give us some thought. You know, if you need some, you know, I'll be available if you want to think through. If you got specific questions about this, that, or the other, whatever they are. You know, give me a buzz. You know, we'll do a 5-minute, you know, conversation or whatever. But But this is something you need to wrestle with, you know, personally, just like I did, just like, you know, all my friends have, that I know they've gone through that. So what I've done there is I've given them the time and the space, and so they know I'm not going to go push anyway, you know. And you have to be sensitive, because that's, we'll get into that on, I don't know where we're going to get into that. Well, whatever. There's a phrase, there's a bullet in here somewhere that says, don't, yeah, there it is, H, it's under H, don't be salesy and pushy. We'll talk about that. Okay, so you leave it open when you sense that it's time, they give you a signal, or you don't think you're really close enough to them, you know, you don't sense an openness there to move it the next step. D is asking the self-assessment. Remember, a lot of what I'm trying to do here is to invoke the inbuilt biblical things in the individual. I'm trying to use nature as well. God has built in. See, He's left the 51% working. See, so there are forces and pressures inside of human nature, inside of societies, etc., that work toward a support for His general mandates. And one of those is the freedom that comes from critical thinking. When you back up and you look at yourself, that ability to say, how am I doing? Am I right or wrong here? That self-critical thing. And so you'll see me consistently ask these self-assessment. Get them to think, where are you? How are you responding to this? You know, we'll talk about at the end, we'll talk about, you know, now here's what you're going to feel once you go through this. Just recognize this and understand how this works. And see, we do this today anyway, right? And so in self-assessment, we're getting them to ask us, you know, I can tell from our conversation that you've been opening up to this idea of asking Christ in your life for a good while now. And I can tell, I can see this in you, you know, in our conversation. What have been the main things influencing you in that direction? And see, we've already told them the things generally that have moved us in that direction. This issue, this crisis, this friend, this something of this type. It looks like you've moved. What's closer toward God? What would you say, you know, back up for a second. What's moved you that way? How have you done that? What would you attribute that to? And they'll back up and they'll reflect. And that's what we're trying to get them to do. We're trying to get them to think. In the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis is so consistently, you know, pointing out that the enemy's main tactic is ignorance and fog and confusion, and don't let them think. Don't let them see the absurdity of the position, or how ridiculous their notions of real life is, or, you know, whatever the individual things are, is that just don't let them think. Just stop them from moving beyond vagueness and generalities to asking specifically, would this make sense? How God and the devil are in the details, they say, right? But the devil likes to stay on the ambiguity. Likes to play in the vagueness. Because you win, because you can win with marketing there. Right? You can win with marketing with vagueness. Okay? Hop and sizzle. And what we're trying to do here, like I say, is, you know, what have been the main things moving you that? And then how far away do you think you are from that? So I always consistently will use 0 to 10. Because I always talk with my hands. And so I'll always say, okay, on the spectrum. 0 means I'm over here, I hate God. 1 is I'm in love with God. Where are you? You know, on this spectrum. 1, I'm not sure He exists. I'm more sure He exists than my mother exists. Okay. Where are you on the spectrum? And how has it changed? How has it changed? Get them to visualize. I use that a lot. Trade-offs of inviting them to Christian events. Okay, the Christian events are like churches and concerts and things of this type. They might see Christian, and you have this individual choice here. You got to think about this. They might see Christian love, but they might focus on the ritual or showy aspect of it. Now, they might see Christian joy, but they might get sidetracked on Christian weirdness. They might see community life, but they might get sidetracked on some issue other than Jesus and the gospel, especially at events that are not 100% evangelism focused. So if you go, and I've been the victim, you know, of these myself, where you go to a Christian event where somebody took you to convert you or something of this type, and you go in there, and it may have been the most perfect sermon, but one single illusion, you know, one illustration would get me off thinking, you know, somewhere else, or I'd see somebody, you know, with a spiteful look in the congregation looking at, you know, being critical toward another Christian, and I'd get over into the hypocrites thing, you know. And so, but if the church has a lot of love, or the group has a lot of love, or the event's going to have a lot of love. Remember, love is going to cover a bunch of that. You know, so God's going to mask some of the noise out in this if there's a lot of that there. But you have to think through. If you know, it's like, don't give them a book you haven't read. You know, if you know what this event's going to be like, and you've been to them and things of this type, and it's focused and it's going to be clear, that's the only due diligence you got to be careful of there. We'll come back to this issue if they become a Christian. We'll have a separate set of issues here. But here you just have to sort of follow your internal heart and your conscience about this as to what you anticipate they will see. If they are already hypercritical people, it may not be good to take them to a group event, because they're going to find something. They're going to find something to quibble about, and they might get off the track.
I mean, you just feel uncomfortable there.
Yeah, uncomfortable. That's a whole separate issue about the dynamics of feeling uncomfortable, right? Absolutely. But yeah, they're all kind of issues associated with the groups. Most of this stuff, most of the, you know, the evangelism that occurred in the New Testament, apart from the inaugural events, were one-on-one small group evangelism. You get a couple of big sermons, Peter at Pentecost, Peter in front of this, but most of that stuff was just one-on-one, small families. You know, there was a lot of jail conversions, because Christians spent a lot of time in jails. You know, that's the first place we showed up in non-Christian literature. We're in the jail reports, because we were illegal. And so the first records of us are in the police records, you know, of that they won't bow to Caesar or, you know, those kinds of things. But it's still very close, very small group oriented. When using Christian literature, if you're going to use actual efficient Christian literature, I don't know if it would be of any help in thinking through this for you, but I've got a small booklet at home on this, about this. I'll bring it in tomorrow and loan it to you for a week. Then later, did it make sense to you? Did you take any action based on it? So you're asking them, how did it change them? How did it change them? Followed by why or why not. I didn't take action because I didn't read it. I didn't take action because I disagreed with page 3. I didn't take action because of whatever. Right? All right. Yeah, I did take action. I thought a little bit about it. And I think that makes sense. That part makes sense. I think we move on. Notice I made the. I have a small booklet at home about this, as opposed to I have it in my pocket. I brought it for you this morning. I have your name engraved on it. Okay, just you can do that. You just got to be careful. You know, sometimes you can do it in a jocular way. You can in a jocular way. You can do this. You if you've got, you know, close relationships that know you're evangelistic at some level, and you are not positioned thereby as not being serious about it at the same time, that it's just a game you play, telling people about Jesus because this is just part of who you are, as opposed to this is something, the most important thing in your life, and it spills over this way. That's the downside of jocularity, is that sometimes you can, but you've got to be able to switch from the jocular to the somber and the very sober about the realities of what this means to you in your life. And so you've got to be able to make that switch, or else you'll just be the Christian comic, you know, of the group, you know, and you'll just be a curiosity, a town jester per se. All right, so Christian literature using a website. Okay, now there's a lot of websites out there that's got religious literature. I gave some in one of your assignments. If you want the URL for that one, I can make it available. And what I put in your binder, you know, the front were these three things on the think tank. They're evangelistic pieces, First Step, Christian, and New Little. And the way I introduce, way you would could introduce that is, for some people, this decision is very private. You might take a look at this URL and make a copy of it to think through at home. Just FYI. Now, the reason some of this works is this is where you detect a sensitivity that you can't do a call to action pretty clear. You know, it's just not, you're not either not going to be able to get an opportunity there at the office for this, or it's just not going to work with this individual, or perhaps not even your style, not even your own personal pathos. And so this is this is where you let them off the hook from being afraid that you're going to go there, as if they've been approached upon by others. With the, it's very private, you might take a look at this to think through at home. Okay? In other words, take this to where it's quiet, you know, and look at this at home as opposed to just printing it here, and I'll stand here while you read this, and I'll ask it. And again, that shows a tremendous amount of respect for their feelings when you do when you show this kinds of sensitivity to the way we work, the way people are. You know, I understand it's like those. You know, we mentioned a couple times, but you know, this may make you nervous. I've got those in my track, so I say, get ready. You know, there's something weird about this book. I'm going to warn you because I'm going to say something from it and you're going to feel nervous a little later on. Be ready for it. And I actually will say that in some of the tracks that I'll use, the tracks that I write on the tank. So make a copy of it to think through at home, just an FYI, just letting you know. Then later, did you ever have a chance to look at that? Did it make sense to you? Was it of any help to you? Did you end up taking its advice? Right? Followed by the why or why not. And that sort of polls them. Sees, you know, where are you on this? Did you get a chance to look at it? And I've got three there, and the main differences between the two, on first step, the first step one is for somebody that is ready to take that, literally, first step toward God. In other words, they're already at the end of the cycle, so to speak. They're at the end of the sales cycle, and they're ready for a call to action. They're ready for a call to action. And New Little is, first step is for that. First step is should be in your, actually, in the binder. Yeah, you should have a little handout in the front called When You're Ready to Take Your First Step Toward God. And what I do there is surface a whole bunch of different reasons why people come to God so that in case they've forgotten theirs or they're going to discover another one in this list, okay, it allows them to continue reading. And then once we get there, the next bullet, but so much of our mindset is similar among us at this point, we talk about feelings of vagueness, feelings of uncertainty about this decision, that's normal, natural, common, etc. Okay? And so we're ready to take the step. I've said you're going to feel weird about this a little bit, but your reasons are very legitimate, you know, the people that come here for a various number of reasons. Yours is legitimate. And then I go into the actual message. And the message is very, very short. Because hopefully by this time they've already gotten the basics of the message from you. If not, there's enough in here to pique to set enough structure here. And then I go for the punchline. The first step is a heart-to-heart with Jesus. And I've got the little prayer right there. And then I've got the after comment, which is, how did you respond? Because one of the problems in our culture that's a feel culture, if they ask Jesus in their life and something doesn't happen, they don't feel fireworks and stuff like this, they say it didn't take, he's not real, all this stuff is bunk, nothing happened, my toe didn't grow back. And generally what's experienced, well, not generally, often, what's experienced is rather opposite. It's a negative thing. The old nature cuts on and says, see, this wasn't real. Why did you do this? It was stupid. Look at you. You're here in Silicon Valley. You just prayed to this invisible deity that, and then he judges all these horrible atrocities of the church and whatever up, you know. And so the feelings that typically will come up there will be one of either further confusion or anger or rebuttal or something of this type. So I've got a section, a little bitty section there for, preparing them for that. So first step is for that. Christian, you've seen it's a one page that tries to redefine what it is. As opposed to a crisis thing, it's a relationship, an ongoing relationship, an interactivity with God. So if you had to, if they have a Christian background, some kind of Christian upbringing where you expect that it's a God just, bails us out every 2 weeks, or when we need it, that they might need to be, again, the relationship needs to be repositioned and re-understood. And the New Little is a longer one. It's front and back of two. I used to use it as a trifold that I would send out in all the bills that I would pay. And so it was a trifold track. Now I just put out the little Wittgenstein's net card. But it was a trifold so that there was two pages front and back, single-spaced. So it's quick, generally a quick read, but it has most of the components of the gospel explained with a lot of scripture. So it's much more explicit, much more. It should have been in your little packet too, is it? Yeah, the trying again. Trying again was after I wrote a 30-page one, Next step, the main one that I use on the think tank, is a 30-page. It's got all this apologetics and stuff in it. And so this was trying again. It's what my second attempt at getting something that I could leave on windshields and put in bills, as opposed to 30 pages on the laser printer every time I paid PG&E. You know, wasn't going to work. Postage alone would have killed me. So you can see that the steps through there are attempting to explain the gospel a little more clearly. And then you may have your own website. You may put your own up, whatever. If you find a good website out there that's got a real good presentation that fits your style, you know, to have that written down in your wallet somewhere, you know, a little scrap of paper that you could pull out if you need to. H is don't be salesy or pushy. If you act now, we'll throw in a free copy of the tape series on Leviticus. This is not the Ginsu Knives thing. You know, if you act now. Well, anyway, I won't make that comment. Poking fun of a particular religious group. The second one, the biblical images of this involve growth and time. So, salesy and pushy, the biblical images, remember, of salvation involve this new birth, the second birth, where you've got this period, you've got a seed sprouting. So it's a progressive thing that occurs from... I mean, you know, Jesus sent them out to reap from where they didn't sow, his followers, right? So people would have sowed 35 years ago in some of your co-workers, you know, and the fruit's just now coming. And so you got to recognize that you don't want to be pushy here, because the next one called Don't Bruise the Fruit. I remember my first preacher, he was very evangelistic, would consistently, because in my enthusiasm and exuberance, I would tend to bruise the fruit. So I would overhandle love, I'd put too much pressure on them, and so they would develop these little bruise spots all over the bananas and the pears. And
Chuck Swindoll has a Today Show, if you get a chance when you leave here, catch it, because he talks about him and Bruce Waltke and three other, you know, card-carrying evangelists.
Oh, yeah.
Get this artist in a corner and they're ready to scalp her.
Oh, no.
And he says, non-believers may be lost, but they know when they're being scalped.
Yeah, right, you that's know? Good.
And
right.
He said they had it right at the crisis point, and he's nudging Waltke, you know, get her.
Yeah, go for the jugular, right.
Waltke didn't, you know. Right. He postponed and backed off and had a one-on-one with her later.
Smart way. That's the thing, is that it's just too easy to...
It's a great case study.
That is good. That's good. And it's too easy to do this, because there's a thrill that comes in this process where God's blessing this, and you see, you know, open hearts and stuff like this. It's just really neat. And so the enthusiasm wants you to just, you know, go the extra mile, right? And this is like, you know, I'm excited to have a baby. Why don't we go in and get it out now? You know, you don't do this. You wait until it's ripe. You don't go bruise the fruit and pluck it before it's... And that is hard to do. And it's hard to do... Frankly, also, and this has always been a Christian experience, is because these are such minority experiences that we don't get to share our innermost passion for the person that loves us most with everybody every day. We don't get to do this a lot. We don't get to tell freely the most beautiful thing in our lives. You know, we have to sort of watch it. And it's not because of the legal environment. It's because of the impact that has on others. Often we bruise the fruit. We drive them away with unguarded comments and, you know, churchy slogans and things of this type. So it's easy to just the exuberance of the other thing to create a problem. Like I say, you want the exuberance of love to always be there, but it's a wisdom thing. Remember, it's a wisdom. It's peaceable. It doesn't push. And I've got one little, how are you coming on the decision you were wrestling with a while back? You haven't mentioned, you know, where you came out on that. And I was curious if you'd finally made some decision about those big picture issues we talked about last February. Okay, they seemed like important matters to you then, especially after that illness that was in the January thing. And so this is where, you know, you left it open, or, you know, it didn't go anywhere, or you didn't sense a closure about it, or things of this type, where you would come back and you might use this. Hey, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, where did you come out? How did you do? You know, when we had these conversations, that lunch thing, that thing, you know, where'd you come out on the thing? Did you make any more progress? Did you have to postpone it? So you had to postpone it. So, you know, when do you think you're going to you know, get back to it? You think it's soon, or have you thought about it since then? You know, these are big issues. And so that's just a way about, you know, it seemed important to you then. And sometimes this will, because a lot of times what will happen is it'll shut down. So in the fight, you know, if they get distracted with something else. Something else will come along in that warfare and distract their attention or change the thing. And sometimes the part of this question that said it seemed like it was important to you back then is one of those self-assessment questions. And they say, well, it really was, but, well, actually, I guess it should still be important to me now. I need to get back to that. Sometimes you'll get that kind of response, see? And you're just pointing out that if it's not important to them now, what's changed? You know, what's changed? Well, I guess I've just been so punch drunk with work I haven't had time to think about it. Oh, so it's not that you made a decision and decided to go, you know, but, oh, yeah, okay. And then you can perhaps start the conversations back up. And then you get the one about you're just trying to make me into a Christian. Every now and then you'll get this. And these are even people that, you know, this is a stock phrase because even the people that have tracked with you all this way in dead sobriety, you know, something's big and happened in their life and you've now become a part of, you know, of their experience and praying for them. And this is very, very real. And so, I mean, you're right there. And they're right there and they're ready to do this. And boom, out of nowhere will come this thing. Because Christianity is stereotyped as this, you know, in our culture as this missionary scalping, you know, we're going to count heads and notches on the belt and, oh, you're just trying to convert me. And often it'll come out as a convert me. As we have a biblical precedence for making me into a Christian, Paul. But they'll generally say, oh, you're just trying to convert me. Or they'll say it some other way, are you trying to convert me? You know? And like I said, that literally is not, it's unpredictable when that sucker comes up. Because it's almost out of character for most of the people that you're dealing with. But it will somehow pop up. Because, like I said, there's a warfare going on, and things are going to pop up in their head. But this one comes up a good bit once they perceive that they're almost being converted. You know, once they entertain this as an alternative future, right? Once they've done that, they think, oh, let's see. There's two of us here. It's not just me and God. Oh, there's me, God, and Glenn. Maybe Glenn's. And then all this evangelism, and depending upon their background, may not come up, but sometimes you'll get this. And I've got just three chuckle kinds of ways out of this to defuse the issue. And the first one is, I wish it were that simple, Phil. No, this process is something you are in the middle of, not me. I'm just an observer here. I'm only giving you my 2 cents worth. What I came with away with when I went through a similar process. No, this is between you and God. No such thing as making someone into a Christian. I am interested now in seeing you find the same good deal I found, because I'm your friend, of course. Or I'm your co-worker, of course. And I would encourage you to take advantage of this, but I would do the same about any issue that I felt really strongly about. If I found a, you know, fantastic financial investment, yeah, I'd tell you to take advantage. If I found a restaurant, I got a couple examples there. If I found a cause that I really believed in, I would urge you to support it too. It's just about friends telling friends about good things they found. And I would expect you to do the same for me. Now, you'll find common through these where I'll use the phrase, and I would expect you to do the same thing for me. See? Because this is not me. You know, I would expect them, if they found a really good value or a really good deal out of friendship, to come and tell me about it. So if the roles were reversed and they were the Christian here, I would expect them to come tell me about it. So that's an important reciprocity and an appearance kind of thing. Because this is not abnormal. See, that's the point I'm trying to make here, is that you would expect this. This is what people do, not religious converts. This is not a religious role conversation. These are friends. These are associates. These are caring people, you know, just sharing the wealth.
Do they ever tell you they're glad to hear that because they want to tell you about their...
No, I never had one of them. But about the restaurant they're opening on Saturday night, you know, they went in and put on their money. No, I've only been able to do this one like about twice. And the response was good. The response was, it defused it. You know, they defused it. Because what you did, you took it out of religious roles back to personal roles. And see, this whole thing is about people. See, this is not a religious, this is not a missionary evangelist and a potential convertee. You know, these are two humans, right? These are two humans. But so it, the times that I've used this and variants of that, without the clause about I would expect you to do the same for me. It's just, you know, this is a good deal I found. You have to watch whether, and I put it in here a couple of these. The one that I normally deal with about a good cause. Has a value associated with it that a good restaurant doesn't. You know, I don't want to put Jesus in the category with restaurant. But sometimes if, like I said, the reason I got restaurant in there is I got three things in everything I do, so if they misunderstand one, they'll pick up from the family resemblances among the three. So I've got in there three of these about, you know, a good investment, and I close there with a value about a cause, a good priority, a good value in life. The chuckle, nah, I'll leave that to the professional Christians. Right? Now, I've positioned myself back as a human there, if you've noticed. See, that was the point of that. Nah, I'll leave conversion to the professional Christians. I'm just pointing out where I found some real help, Lisa, and where I found some answers and resources. And I would hope you do the same for me. Just that, you know, this isn't a professional thing. And then the last one is the jocular version. Of course I am. I'm your friend. Why wouldn't I? When someone tried to help make me into a Christian, chuckle, it was a major positive step for me and my family. I've been thankful for a long time. Somebody shared their experiences with me without pressure, without questionable motives. I encouraged me to take advantage of the deal. Can you blame me for urging you to take a similar step, Patty? See, and you won't get a whole lot of negative responses to that. And again, that's one if your style supports that. If you've got a jocular style that can do that, that works. Otherwise, you'll need to use some of the other versions of that type of thing. And then the last point under the section tonight is set their post-decision expectations correctly. Now, let me make a comment about that before we look at that. You will very often not get a chance, at least in an office setting, to see whether they make this step or not. Very rarely in a lunchroom cafeteria will you get the opportunity to pray with them to receive Christ. You sometimes get that in other settings, but it's rare that you would find that in a company cafeteria, in a coffee shop. You might. In a coffee shop you might, but it's less frequent. In the situations where you will not be able to see that and not be there when they make that decision, you've got to set their post-decision expectations. What are you going to feel when that happens? Because like I say, they're going to go through a couple of little, you know, whiplash things about, oh, I didn't feel anything. Boy, this was stupid. You know, they're going to go through these things, and you have to sort of set them ahead of time so that if they go there without you, they aren't disappointed. They write the whole thing off without the benefit of your counsel. And so a comment of something of this type, Lauren, a couple of days after our conversation, you know, about you considering asking the Lord in your life more, it dawned on me that I should point out not to expect any lightning bolts or Charlton Heston voices or major emotional upheavals when you make that step. You know, some people expect the heavens to open up when they pray to Him, asking Him into their life for the first time, and then they end up doubting whether they even paid attention. So just a word of the wise, it's like most personal relationships. The feeling aspects vary by situation, but the fact of the relationship can be depended upon. Now, I got a couple of hidden agendas that I'm trying to smuggle in there, and the dominant one is that it's a personal relationship. That a personal relationship, I'll be mad at God sometimes. I will doubt Him sometimes. I will be infatuated with Him sometimes. I will be delirious with Him sometimes. I will be on a speaking relationship with Him sometimes, right? Be very casual. In other words, it will have the range of personal relationship things, and I'm trying to make sure that that's clear here, that the feeling things and depth of affection grows through time spent together. You know, you invest in people, kids and family and spouses and loved ones. And, you know, affection is a time thing. It's a fruit. It grows. And so you have to make sure they set, when they take that first step with Jesus, that all of a sudden the fruit had, you know, a fully grown set of fruit, you know, that may or may not happen. More often than not, it doesn't. What they do have, and we'll talk a lot about expectations in a few more minutes, in a later section, but they will often have a sense that something's changed. They will have a click inside, something that clicks that they don't know what it is. It may have joy, it may have peace, it may have love, it may have something. But it is almost never not accompanied with some level of doubt if they do it alone. If they do it alone, there's generally an element of doubt, of uncertainty about this. And some of these are very subtle. I remember the first time I saw this, was staggering in its revelatory. I was in college, and there was a buddy of mine that I'd been witness to for the whole year. And he would come to Bible studies, and he was raised in the same denomination I was, so he had the same set of problems I did. And we would talk about these for hours. And I remember him going up to the third floor of the fraternity house, and he came down, and he was just so forlorn. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Well, I've asked Christ in my life, but he doesn't come in. And nothing's happening." And I said, what do you think the problem is? He said, "I don't think I'm sincere enough." And I said, when did you do this? "Well, I've done it 15, 20 times up there. But nothing ever. I don't think I'm sincere enough." And it just was so clear to me. I said, "Don't you think you've indicated your sincerity by asking 15 or 20 times?" And it was scales off the eyes. He says, "You're right." And he ran back up to do it one last time. One last time. Closed the deal, came down with joy. And I remember thinking, the subtlety of the traps. The subtlety of the traps. And to watch out for those for the next 40, 50, 60 years myself, where you work yourself into those. But I realized that, yep, you do have that issue. That there's going to be those doubts. And that sometimes just some obvious comment from an outsider either said then or earlier, "You're going to feel this. Be prepared. Don't expect this." So that we don't fall prey to the seats and the snares of the devil.
Got a reinforcer for that one. I was a Christian about 3 years, and I heard a teaching on the unforgivable sin.
Right.
Right. The Holy Spirit. And I was smitten.
Right.
My prior life is real life.
Right.
I screwed up a couple of times.
Only a couple times.
By that time. It had been a couple hundred more since. But I was just, and I worked myself into a tizzy about it for about 3 days.
Yeah.
And I dragged myself in here of a Thursday morning, and Zeisler picked up and said, "Kevin, something's
eating at you, right?
What's going on? This is what it is." And he said, and I said, "I'm really concerned about it." And just as if he was talking about the weather, he said, "Well, seems to me if you're concerned about it, you can't possibly be."
That's right, exactly.
Because
exactly.
People aren't concerned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. It's just a small insight like that. Absolutely. And that's a pretty common one too. Yeah, absolutely. Because that's a trick we fall into about, I'm worried that I'm too far away from God. I'm worried that I'm getting too far away from God. It bothers me. It's eating at me. Right, as far as my concern is, I'm more concerned about it than he is, obviously. But that's a good point. Absolutely. And we have that. We definitely have that. Now let's look at our, it's a little bit before 9, so let's look at our homework. And then we'll come back to where we are. Our assignments for next week, let's see, are 17 and 18, is that right? Okay, 17 action is write your call to action statement. Practice with the mirror 3 times. Then give the combination of your pivot plus your story plus your call to action twice. So do that in front of you. We're trying to assemble this thing. And just do this in front of the mirror. Okay? And like I say, the point is to get you to say it out loud. You might also, like I said, there's an issue about the mirror. How can you read and look at yourself in the mirror? Okay, that's a separate issue. But some of you are multitasking. That's why you have 2 eyes, right? 18, call to action. Write out your response to, "You're just trying to make me a Christian," and practice 3 times. Because you'll have to write your own style of that. You'll come up with something short that works with your style. You may not can use any of those, but you have to come up with one that the main structure is puts you back on the human level and puts them back at a human level. You would expect them to do the same thing. Okay? So that's sort of where we're trying to go with this. Next time we're trying to find a way that works for us to call to action. You will not get to do that all the time, clearly, And I couldn't even postulate as to how much you would get to. But it would differ from setting to setting. Friendship relationships. When you develop friendships relations with people at the office that you meet outside, you will get to use that a lot. So it's just that in office settings, you probably won't be able to call people to a decision. You have to use some of the others. Why don't you go, you know, take a look at this. If you respond to that like I will, you'll take that step. It may take you as long as it took me to do that, which was a number of years or whatever. As long as you position it as a real thing, as a friend telling another friend, you can make that happen.
So is it 16 or 17 I'm making a copy of to circulate?
We're going to do the someday lunch, 16. We're not going to have the pivot and the call to action, but it's just going to be 16 to make copies of. So if you bring me a copy of that, actually what we'll do on the copies is bring me a copy and I'll keep it for a couple weeks and make some comments just to you privately, just some feedback privately as well if there's anything that makes sense to encourage you with or whatever. I know this. That's why I choose my word carefully. What was that phrase? Enhance your abilities. Right? Enhance your abilities. So that's what we're looking for in terms of copy, just if you can do that. Now, we're almost exactly on time, but I'm going to go over deliberately for a second and talk about what we're going to talk about next time. Now we're getting into problems, okay? Because there's a billion places that this can go strange and go strange in a wonderful way, okay? You know, it's when you go down this little cookie cutter thing that we've had this little someday lunch and all this kinds of stuff, right? This little decision, it's not just one branch. This thing can branch off in a billion different directions, some of which we'll talk about, all of which have treasures in them. Because if they didn't take the branch and you don't cover that issue, what comes at the end is not going to be fully grown. See? And something's going to, it's like any kind of issue, if you don't deal with it early, it festers. And things of this type. And so we've got practical issues. The first one you can see there about being careful in groups. We talked about this once before. You get into a lunchroom discussion about getting hit from the side. We'll talk about some of those. We're going to be dealing with B. When the tough questions come up, that has to do with like the objections. What about a God that makes mosquitoes? You know, what about the evil God of the Old Testament? Whatever. We'll talk about, we've got a number of things to respond on that because that's one of the tougher ones you get. In Silicon Valley. You get a lot of these because of the nature of our culture out here. You'll get a lot of those. And then we've got issues about the cults and things of that type we're going to do. So, but each one of the problems, see, is a chance to... One of the cool things, see, about apologetics, and hold on one second here.